The world invests in American treasury bills and bonds as a bet on stability, strength, rule of law. You know, it's rare and dangerous for a presidential candidate or an elected official to brainstorm scenarios where the U.S. economy evaporates.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:08. It is Friday. That was a quick week, wasn't it? June 3rd, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell, and welcome to another business day. We've got lots to talk about. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management is in-house. We're going to be talking about the Fed, interest rates, the jobs report, all of that coming up. But first, let's get started with your overnight market intel from the WGN Market Desk. As you heard Vic tell you there about world stocks this morning, they're teetering back and forth in the United States. All of the eyes are on Wall Street, and actually all of the eyes are on the Federal Reserve. The jobs report too later today to see exactly where we might be headed in terms of interest rates. We got an indication of that yesterday when one of the Fed governors spoke to Bloomberg Television. The governor was Fred Tarullo. Fred, is that right? Fred Tarullo? No, Daniel Tarullo. I know I'm trying to memorize all of these names, where he spoke a little bit about what he thought would be good monetary policy. He spoke a little bit about concern over the stagnant jobs market, the stagnant economy in general, also talking a little bit about Brexit. Here's some of his comments.
I don't know how one knows what normal is in any particular set of circumstances. It's not like the economy should be at 98.6 degrees. Another approach is basically the one that says, look, we're in a period of secular stagnation, excessively high savings, excessively low investment, which counsels keeping interest rates very low for very long.
There was a lot of talk, too, about Brexit, the exit of the UK, Great Britain, from the European Union. Latest polls on that show 46% in, 42% out, 12% don't know. That's according to a Sky News poll that's out today. Last night, the Prime Minister of the UK was before live television answering questions in a more than an hour-long session on that. It was a big concern. It's probably going to be one of the biggest factors in whether or not the Federal Reserve raises interest rates at its meeting this month. Let's bring in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, you've been sort of monitoring all of this. You read the beige book on the beach, probably just like I did this week. It certainly sounds like Brexit is going to be a major factor in the decision of the Fed.
It will be, because it's going to have a lasting impact, especially if they vote to leave the euro, on trade, currency, the economic growth. We've got numbers from Great Britain overnight indicating some slowdown, lower pricing, kind of a deflationary type of an environment. So I think you've got the general population kind of holding back, businesses holding back, waiting for the vote. So a vote against or vote for leaving the euro will have a big impact, and certainly will force the Fed to stand on the sidelines.
If you could, and again, I reached out to some of the people I know in the UK to sort of give me a little bit of insight in this, because I can't wrap my head around it. It seems like all of the major economic analysts, all of the people who are important, say if they do this, it's going to be devastating. So why are they even thinking about it?
In a very sarcastic fashion, it's very similar to why are we electing who we've got running for president. It's open for the general population, and it hits people differently. Some believe, and certainly there's, since England is an island, they have for a very long time marched to their own drummer and have distanced themselves, certainly by arm's length, to the continent of Europe. So I think that's one of the major reasons why.
And it brings back to brings us all back to this point about how we're all connected globally, and the concern that it's causing not just here but around the world What are the impacts that we would see from this, just everyday life, everyday economic life?
Well, I mean, it's going to impact trade an awful lot. It's going to have to redo a lot of the contracts that they have. So, again, certainly for the U.S., when we take a look at those, our trading major trading partners in Europe certainly is one of them, along with Canada and Mexico. It's going to have an impact on trade. It's going to have an impact on our currency. The dollar will be very strong at that point, and that, again, will negatively impact those that are doing international trade. And it may have the impact, too, of increasing interest rates in the European arena as well.
So in the United States, with our own problems, so the economy seems to be giving us signs of positiveness, weakness. The consumer confidence was low, but still, people were spending. I don't know how to I don't know how to wrap my head around that either.
We're muddling through, and that's just it. I mean, it's a slow slog, and really, the wet blanket over all of this, and we've talked about it ad nauseum, is debt. You know, we still have a very high level of debt. Maybe not on personal balance sheets as much anymore. It's been shifted now to the government and corporations. But debt is the wet blanket that I think is really holding down overall economic growth.
Speaking of blankets, we can talk about the jobs report, which is coming out later. We'll try to find out if that's going to be wet or dry as we continue our conversation this morning with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management here on The Opening Bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. U.S. stocks closed higher yesterday, with healthcare shares driving the S&P index above 2,100 for the first time. The Dow closed 49 points higher at 17,838. The NASDAQ was up 19 ahead of the government's highly anticipated employment report due out this morning. Many analysts think the Fed will hold off on raising its key short-term interest rate when it meets in 2 weeks. It might take a much bigger than expected job gain in May, well above 200,000, to nudge the Fed toward a rate hike this month. Gap says sales at established stores fell 6% in May. That's better than analysts expected 7% decline. CEO Art Peck has been trying to overhaul the business, which has struggled to get shoppers to buy without big discounts. And Britain's new £5 note features the image of World War II leader Winston Churchill. The new design was unveiled yesterday at Churchill's birthplace in Oxfordshire. A blend of old and new, the Churchill fiver will be printed on polymer, a thin plastic film. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management this morning. The big discussion is whether the Fed is going to raise rates, when they're going to raise rates. We got a peek into that with the Beige Book this week. Last Friday, when we talked, Paul, we were getting ready to hear from Janet Yellen, who was going to have a conversation at Harvard University, I believe. This is some of what she said.
I think for the Fed to gradually and cautiously increase our overnight interest rate over time, and probably in the coming months, such a move would be appropriate.
So there's some more words. What do you think?
Oh, everybody was hanging on her every word before they ran off to the Hamptons. So once she said that, that was it. And actually, the markets didn't react too terribly much to the comments, because they've been prepped now with the Fed governor speaking the prior 2 weeks, basically saying, listen, we're going to be raising rates. And again, as we talked about Brexit, probably not in June, certainly July being on the table. So they are talking themselves into raising rates, and barring some unforeseen circumstances of some very bad economic data, which we really don't see, we will see higher rates certainly by July.
Let's put that on the back burner then. So we'll just say, okay, we're done with the Fed. Let's talk about our portfolios as we head into the weekend, and things that we can do to prepare ourselves for potential turmoil. Is there something that we need to be, in terms of Brexit, in terms of the Fed, moves we should be making with our portfolio? I know we've been sort of safe with stuff with bonds, but is that...
You know, it's interesting, because when you take a look at the markets as a whole, we've seen over the last 9 months 10% declines in the market regularly. And we had August, September, the markets went crazy. We had it in January, February of this year. And really the best policy through all of that is to kind of stay the course. So again, playing it a little bit closer to the vest, your portfolio probably won't be dropping nearly as much as the overall market, but making slow progress as the markets recover. So slow and steady, I think, continues to be the order of the day. There's not much on the horizon that would force us to really make significant changes to the portfolio. Again, I think slow and steady and a conservative bend will allow you to withstand whatever storms might be coming up this summer and come into the fall with a good-looking portfolio.
It goes back to the discussion that we've had about not looking at your portfolio and not watching all of these day-to-day developments. It can drive you a little bit crazy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can potentially get yourself scared out of decent positions. Again, the goal is to keep a reasonable amount of money invested in the market, depending on your overall risk profile. I mean, that's really more the key than it is anything else, and making sure that the portfolio reflects your overall risk profile, aggressive, conservative, et cetera, and trying to maintain that over time without changing things up drastically from day to day, week to week, or even month to month.
I hate to talk about politics. I hate to mention the names of these candidates, but they're back in the news again. And it prompted a columnist yesterday to write about Donald Trump. And the headline is "How Donald Trump is Going to Kill Your 401k. And that jumped off the screen at me because I thought, okay, I have a 401k. What should I read ahead. And it talked about some of the things about treasury bonds, especially some of the comments he's made about that. Is there any fire there, or is it just smoke?
You know, again, when we talk about Donald Trump and a lot of his comments, a lot of it is off the cuff. Certainly, we've had problems with debt in the past, and it revolves around the debt ceiling. You know, we did this in 2011. We did it again in 2013. We're not going to raise the debt ceiling. We're not going to raise. We're holding the government hostage for a while. But in the end of the day, they've raised the debt ceiling, we've paid our bills, and U.S. Treasuries continue to be in high demand around the world. We're still paying interest as opposed to many other countries which have interest rates below zero. So there is still an attraction for U.S. debt, which I think will continue. And that's going to be one of the keys, is that as long as our debt remains a place to go for people to invest in, we'll continue to be okay with it. So I don't see the need to completely throw everything out at this point.
This is another good reason to have a portfolio manager to calm you down and say don't do anything drastic, don't make any big changes. If you could give us a little bit of advice about how you would counsel one of your clients who came to you today and said, hey, you know what, I got to get out of this, or I got to do that. And would you tell them the same thing you just said?
Absolutely. I mean, we can go back over the last 8 to 10 years, and we can pick out certain instances. The U.S. debt got downgraded. We were AAA. Now we're actually, you know, A-, A+. Oh, my gosh, interest rates are going to go right through the roof because we're no longer a AAA. Our interest rates are lower today than they were in 2011. We take a look at all the various military incursions, economic data, even 9/11, when we looked at that, and in the very short term, there was a drastic change in the markets. But 3-4 months after that, the markets actually recovered to get back above where they were at the time of 9/11. So when you take a look at things in a very small window, yeah, there's a lot to get excited about and a lot to make changes on. But if you broaden your perspective a little bit, it's events to get excited about, but I don't think it really warrants making huge changes to portfolios.
So let's filter out a little bit of the noise. What do you like going forward? Are there any trends coming up that we should be aware of? Where should we be putting our money?
You know, interestingly enough, one of the areas that we're looking at again is healthcare. And it's been back in the news recently with Texas increasing their rates on Obamacare. But in the very broad sense, pharmaceuticals, biotech has been really under fire and performed very poorly since about July of last year. We're starting to see that group pick up. And it fits with our theme of, again, conservative type of a portfolio. So consumer staples, healthcare now, certainly bonds, real estate investment trusts. All of those areas are going to be parts of the economy that no matter what happens to the economy, they're going to continue to be in demand, and people are still going to buy those products and services.
Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management, always good to have you here and steadying us and calming us amid all of this Fed noise and jobs reports noise. And maybe we'll check back with you after we see the jobs report later to see if it's bad.
We'll be excited for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then we'll go on with our Friday.
And then head to the block party or whatever we're going to be doing. Paul, thank you for being with us, as always, on the Opening Bell. By the way, if you want to sign up for Paul's notes, you can go to kingsview.com, if I'm not mistaken, /
WGN.
And you can fill out the form and get Paul's notes and be right there with us as we have this discussion. Paul, have a great weekend.
Thank you so much.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell. 5:37 this morning, the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce set to select the winner of the James Tyree Emerging Business Leadership Award. This award is in memory of Jim Tyree, the former chairman and CEO of Mesro Financial, chairman of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce for many years. The award recognizes and encourages Chicago entrepreneurs and small businesses to grow and create jobs for the region. The winner will be announced June 7th at the Chamber's 112th annual meeting. One of the finalists for that position, for that award, is Sophie Evenoff. She's the president and CEO of Vanille. She's responsible for all of this business of planning, product development, sales, marketing. She is the boss, and she's with us this morning on the Opening Bell. Sophie, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Every time I go to your website, I just start drooling because it's all of the stuff. I would just eat everything.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it. It's calorie-free.
This award is obviously a huge honor just to be nominated to. It speaks to your efforts in the community and how you have pushed your company forward. If you could talk to me a little bit about that and how this recognizes the struggle, I guess, is the best way to describe how small businesses and startups get going.
Yeah, it's such an incredible honor, and just what James Tyree stood for and embodied, that, you know, being successful in business is not just about being business. It's about everything else and combining everything and contributing to the community, having respect for your team and the community and family as well, and staying humble along the way.
Are there challenges that we don't hear about every day that startups like yours go through, that companies like yours go through? We obviously hear the ups and downs and every once in a while the road bumps, but are we really getting a good story about just how challenging it is?
I don't think anyone understands how challenging it is until you're actually a business owner. There's so many hats you have to wear, and you have to be able to change hats so quickly without thinking about it in order to make sure nothing falls behind and you can still push forward. And I think the main thing is to not let anything get in your way and hold you back. You're going to make mistakes. You know, there's going to be problems, but it's how quickly you can bounce back from them.
It is something that obviously others are looking to you as an example. They're saying, hey, if Sophie can do it, maybe I can do it. Let's see how she did it. What advice would you give some of those other people who are coming up?
The most important thing is to be passionate about what you're doing. If you really love what you're doing and you feel it's the right direction that you want to go into, you can be successful. And if you're doing it for the right reasons, you know, not to make money, not to be powerful or famous. If you're doing it just to make yourself happy, then, you know, I think anyone can be successful.
In coming up with your idea, first of all, maybe you could give us a sense of where the idea came from and why you thought it was necessary for Chicago to have such a delicious place.
So actually, I acquired Vanille. I'm not the founder. The business was founded by one of my pastry instructors, and they were ready to sell and, you know, get out of the business. And I think every great city needs somewhere to get amazing dessert and amazing pastry. And I've always felt that way. Pastry has always been my love. And so, you know, since we've grown 200%, and we're fortunate that Chicago is such a foodie town and they appreciate good quality. So they know it and they'll come back and they'll tell their friends and family. And, you know, it's another reason why we have been successful.
You're in the food, the French market, correct? At the Metro station? Hello?
Yes. We're in the French market Lincoln Park and Lakeview.
Do you have plans to expand anytime soon?
We do. I'm currently looking at some suburb locations, and, you know, I'm always open for another opportunity, so you never know.
Going through the website and seeing the menu of things, it changes regularly. You have a nice mix of comings and goings. What reaction do you get from people?
We do. We change. We have a lot of regular customers, so they always want to see new products. We get inspiration from our customers, and we change seasonally, too. We like to highlight seasonal offerings, and now farmers markets are coming up, so we like to incorporate, too, what we can find. And it just keeps, you know, keeps customers coming back and knowing that they'll always see something new, and they can always try something new and experience something new with us.
What would you say are the number one requests, the biggest items that people come in and ask for?
Well, we're known for our French macarons, and so we get a lot of different flavor requests for that. And then we do stud muffins, which is our version of cupcakes, and that was developed by the demand for cupcakes. We were completely against doing cupcakes, but every customer came in and wanted a cupcake. So we put a macaroon on it and gave it a fun name, and there you go.
I think some people sometimes forget what a world-class city Chicago is. If we live here, we may not think about it, but there are all kinds of different ethnicities here, and people are coming from all around the world. Do you feel like you're giving us a taste of what it is to maybe travel to some of those other locations with food?
You know, we do, and initially I didn't really think that because, you know, Vinny is my home. I look at the stores, and it's comforting for me. We have such an international clientele, and they all come to Vinny and say, oh, this tastes just like Paris. Oh, this tastes just like Mexico and different countries. I mean, you can walk into Vinny and hear five different languages being spoken at the table because we can relate to such an international clientele.
And so if you're the winner of the Tyree Award, what is that going to be for you? How significant is that going to be? How will it propel your company forward?
Wow. The two main areas that we've struggled with because we've been growing so fast is technology. We lack a little bit on the technology front. Our technology is really set up for a one-store location, not a multi-location. And the other thing that's very important to us is, you know, providing many more benefits to our team. And you know, health insurance and 401k is such a huge, you know, it's a struggle to how are you going to provide that to your employees. And because we have grown so fast, it's something that got a little bit overlooked and we couldn't sustain it and initiate it. So those are my top two things on the list.
Well, Sophie, best of luck to you and best wishes as you move forward in the future. Sophie Ivanoff, the president and CEO of Vinny Patisserie. I do speak, je parle français un peu, but boy, just this is delicious. There's no other way to describe Vinny. You can find them at vinnypatisserie.com and on Twitter at Vinny Chicago. Again, Sophie Ivanoff, thanks for being on the Opening Bell this morning.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49 on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures pointing toward a higher open on Wall Street, just barely, though, up about 7 points. The S&P NASDAQ futures higher as well. Let's get the latest from the commodities market. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning, and let's begin with the big story of the day yesterday in the grain market at the Board of Trade. Soybean futures climbed to their highest level in nearly 2 years yesterday. Hopes that export demand will rise, and again, the reason being concerns about the quality of the crop being harvested in Argentina. Meanwhile, corn firmed to its highest level since July of 2015, supported by forecasts for a reduced harvest in Brazil. However, the market for corn closed well off its highs, and wheat, it rose to a one-month peak, with technical strength overcoming concerns about the global supply glut. But at the end, the July soybean contract gained 44 and a quarter cents to 11.44 and a quarter. July corn ended unchanged at 4.15 and a quarter, and July wheat ended 9 and a quarter higher at 4.85 and a half. As we turn to the livestock market yesterday, there a little bit of strength in the cattle market because the traders are expecting a slight increase in cash cattle prices. So June live cattle closed 30 cents higher, and the August contract ended up 20 cents. Meanwhile, firm cash and wholesale pork prices pushed up CME lean hogs, some months making new contract highs. Well, tonight, this afternoon at 2:45, I'll look for you, a lot of you folks, at the opening of the Lake Zurich Farmers Market. I'll be there at 2:15 for the ribbon cutting. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. We have some other big business news happening today. We'll start locally. United Airlines says it's overhauling its international business class to win over high-spending travelers and to chip away at its reputation as industry lagging. The new lounges, a full meal before the flight, seats with privacy walls in business class are all coming to United Continental starting in December. The airline trying to win over some of the high-spending travelers and chip away at some of those big airlines, Singapore Airlines, one of them, that just treat you like royalty when you fly. This could or could not work, depends on who you listen to. But the CEO of United out yesterday speaking says the most valuable thing right now to the airline is the international business flyer. And he says in the end, the things that you have to do are you have to find out what they want and give it to them so that they keep coming back, basically. Also, locally, yesterday, we had the news about the Tribune Company. Don't know if you heard this or saw this, the big shareholder meeting yesterday. For now, it looks like the Tribune Company will stay in the hands of its current CEO, current board of directors, but it will have a new name. Tribune Publishing has elected the company's new board and has changed the name to Tron. The name coming out of this meeting yesterday, Tribune has been holding off a bid by Gannett to purchase the airline. Gannett says it's going to be backing off on this now to give the board a little room to move forward. Chairman Michael Farrow in the deal says the company is moving forward with technological improvements. And he says he hopes that the board members, the shareholders who are unhappy, give him a little bit of time to move forward with what he has planned for the Tribune. Also, we're following this story. The MacArthur Foundation, a Chicago-based nonprofit, is offering $100 million, a grant, to a single proposal designed to help solve a critical problem affecting people, places, or the planet. MacArthur Foundation has launched a new competition called 100 and Change. The foundation plans to come up to 5 finalists by next summer and announce a winner by early 2018. Competition seeking meaningful, verifiable, durable, and feasible proposals. It's open to organizations working in any field of endeavor in any part of the world. The applicants must be able to identify the problem they're trying to solve and then explain their solution. Again, $100 million prize by the MacArthur Foundation. Walmart says it'll be testing its grocery delivery service with ride-hailing companies Uber and Lyft in the next 2 weeks in Denver and Phoenix. And if it works, they're going to expand it to Sam's Clubs and Walmarts across the country. Customers pay Walmart the regular $7 to $10 delivery charge online. Make no payments to the driver. The move comes as Walmart expanding its curbside grocery delivery to 14 markets for a total of 54 in 200 stores. That seems to be working for Walmart. Those are some of the big stories this morning. We'll continue to follow your money as we move through the morning on the Steve Cochran Show. A loaded show coming up with Steve Cochran and the gang. We will also be following the latest news for you throughout the day. The jobs report later on this morning as well. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. Our producers, Mary Sandberg, Bennett Wakenight, production help this morning, our engineer, Bob Ferguson.